Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
So, Scott.
Yes, Josh.
Do you want to do a serious Adam and Eve promo?
Actually,
you were talking to me about this the other day. So.
Yeah, and the truth is, the folks that we're talking to right now know Adam and Eve has really good. Why do you do that?
Because it's technically adamandeve.com that we're supposed to be pimping. So you can't just say Adam and Eve. You have to say adamandeve.com.
But the company's name is Adam and Eve, and they are at adamandeve.com.
But we're technically not affiliated with Adam and Eve. We're affiliated with adamandeve.com, the website version.
Okay. Adamandeve.com.
Thank you.
Have great products. They really do. And you know what's there. Great adult products, DVDs, lingerie, toys of all shapes and sizes.
If you're over 18, there's something for you there.
Yeah. If you're over 18, there's something for you there. And the thing that I wanted to talk to today was using our code at the very end. We always talk about our code is
static.
Okay. Gives you guys a great deal. Half off of one item.
Item.
Thank you. Free shipping. Three free DVDs. And a mystery gift. And that's truly a mystery gift. We have no idea what it's going to be. If you use that code, though, static, then you help me and Josh out. And right now, I mean, I take inventories for a living, and sometimes work gets a little thin, real thin. And Josh is always looking for something to do, but what he does right now full time is this work for Jackalope.
And I basically watch movies and play games for a living.
You watch movies and play games. And if you use that code static, you end up helping both of us out, as well as getting a great product and a great deal for yourself. And so this is a serious plea of going, we're not bullshitting you. We need the money.
Pass that code along. If you know somebody who you think might be looking for something, or you know, you've got a bachelor party coming up or a bachelorette party coming up or something like that, you know, go and use the code. Give the code to somebody else. After you've used it, say, hey, I got this great deal at adamandeve.com. Why don't you go get one of those deals too and buy something to, you know, put inside yourself or put yourself inside.
Exactly. And it really, that's kind of what me and Josh are eating on right now. And
it, the way I like to put it is, it's helping keep the lights on.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's our serious plea. You know, help us out, please. We like you.
Can we stop being serious now?
Yes. Go ahead.
All right, Scott. You and I being literally about the same age, I know, like literally in about
4 days?
Six.
6 days.
So I like the term literally about. I know that's kind of a oxymoron there, but.
Yeah. We are exactly almost.
Yes, indeedy. So Scott is something like 6 or 7 days older than me.
Yes.
And
what?
Both of us are.
10 years more mature?
Well, you've got a lot less hair.
Yeah, that's very true.
And I was just thinking the other day, I am so glad that I was born when I was, that I did not have to be a teenager in the 2000s or grow up in the 2000s or today. And you were saying something like you were kind of on the same wavelength on that.
I'm kind of on the same wavelength with you. There are things that I'm very thankful for that I was, you know, I'm glad I was young when I was young. And I'm not sure if I'd want to be young today. But at the same time, I also look at kids. Look at these kids today.
Get off my lawn.
Get off my lawn. But I look at teenagers today, and I am a little bit envious on some grounds.
Such as,
you know me, I'm a technology head. So to be a teenager today and to have access to smartphones, to have access to the internet, while you're in high school, which, yes, I did, but...
Devil's advocate here, don't you think some of that comes from the fact that you grew up in the era when that was all maturing and when all that technology that you're now speaking of was in its infancy and you got to see it become what it is rather than just you were born and smartphones exist?
Partially, but... What I was trying to get to was to have all of that technology that has matured with us just already there today. I'm curious where it's going to go. And I hate to say it, but I'm already noticing myself getting older and not quite, you know, there are some. Usually, I remember being a teenager and grabbing a new piece of electronics or a new piece of technology in some form and just kind of inherently knowing where, you know, that tab A went into slot B. And I kind of inherently knew and organically learned how to hack things in the classic word of hack, meaning take them apart and do things with them you weren't supposed to. And I'm already seeing myself with some new technologies being at a loss. For instance, if my iPod should happen to break on me, I'm not going to be able to fix it the way I could with my old Apple IIe. You know, okay. If my Apple IIe could break, I could look in there, see which card had the scorch marks on it, or which part of the motherboard had the scorch marks on it, desolder it, solder in the new stuff that I needed, and go. And now if my iPod would happen to belch out, I'd just be like, well, I hope a lot of people go to Adam and Eve. Yeah, I hope a lot of people go to adamandeve.com because now I need a new iPod.
Well, see, I you know me, I'm not a big fan of the new technologies. And I do think things used to be simpler. Things nowadays seem too complicated, too overly complicated for things that don't need to be complicated. And I think that partially is because I didn't grow up, you know, having it there. Like, you know, kids today, like you brought up with smartphones, they've always had them. To me, this stuff is needlessly overcomplicated because I don't need all that stuff. But that's because of how I grew up. These people were always, it was always there. You know, I heard a thing when, remember when Brett Favre retired the first time?
Yes.
There were all these news reports that there are kids in high school today who that, you know, in Wisconsin, he's always been the quarterback of the Green Bay Packers their entire lives. And they've never known a quarterback that was not Brett Favre. And it's kind of like, well, you and I grew up in the era prior to Brett Favre, so we remember that. So it wasn't as big of a deal for us. Am I making any sense here?
Yeah, something of some sense.
And I'm rambling, but I'm...
I kind of get it where you're saying that basically the same thing I was saying. Somehow when you're younger, you seem to gain this innate knowledge. I don't remember learning how to code in BASIC, but I can.
I still don't know that, so...
I don't remember... I honestly don't remember learning Visual Basic. I don't remember learning a lot of these languages that I did. What was the other one that I learned to code in? Pascal. I don't remember learning these languages, but if you plop me down in front of an Apple IIe, I can still speak them.
Well, okay, let's leave computers and tech aside for a second.
The other thing that I'm envious of, and this is more of a social thing.
Okay.
You and I grew up in something of a small world. I remember growing up, I had, you know, I could name my neighbors. I could walk to most of my friends' houses. I could, you know, as I got older, I could ride a bike to most of my friends' houses. And it really wasn't until after high school that I got a friend that lived in a house that was far enough that really needed a car to get to.
Okay.
again, going back to the internet and smartphones, and you know, now here we are, we've got this show, and we've got somebody that I consider a really good friend, or well, not maybe not a really good friend, but a friend in Canada, and I've got a friend in Texas, and we've got friends in Serbia and Australia and all over the place. And part of it is because of this newly connected world, relatively newly connected world. And that's the other thing that I'm jealous with kids today is they have the opportunity to play with this newly connected world and to even put together a podcast or a radio show like ours and get friends from all over the place, people that you and I wouldn't have even imagined. You know, being in the 80s, I knew people from Japan and I knew people from Australia, and I was probably the exception in my city. And the only reason I had known people there was because we had traveled there or they were distant family relatives or something like that. But now kids, you know, you fire up Skype and you're off to wherever you want. And I am jealous of that connectedness and that much larger world that they live in.
See, I'm not so much jealous of that. I mean, you know, it's there. It's, you know, it's something we use. But I'm talking about, like, the way we grew up. Now, and let's talk about entertainment, for example. You know, now this is probably a very myopic view, but I think the TV, the movies, and the music we grew up with is far better than the movies, music, and TV of today. And I kind of feel bad for the kids that are growing up where we had Steven Seagal as an action hero. They've got The Rock. I'm sorry, but it's kind of not the same thing for a movie action hero.
I don't know if I'd say that the movies, music, and TV were better. I don't know if I'd say that they were better. Oh, darn, I had a brilliant, brilliant point.
Your train of thought just derail?
Yeah. Again, we had you and I had a lot fewer. That is one thing that I'm glad that I was able to live through. Was that transition from broadcast into cable?
Oh yeah.
And the fact that even when cable was around, we still had NBC, ABC, CBS, and they were still huge.
And then in 87, Fox.
And then in 87, Fox, but we had fewer options, which means we had larger events. Excuse me. A very special episode of blah was a very special episode of blah that you could discuss with your friends at school the next day because you knew that everybody had seen it, not just your little social group, but
a big deal. Everybody. A big deal was Star Trek: The Next Generation.
Right. And yeah.
You know, when that premiered in 87, everybody the next day was talking about that first episode of Star. You know, everybody sat and watched the new Star Trek, as we called it then, that night.
Yeah.
Now it would be, oh, I DVR'd it. I'll watch it next week, or I'll just torrent it next week. And, you know, there was like a collective. We knew all of our friends, if they were not at our house sitting on the floor eating Cheetos with us,
yeah,
they were on the floor of their house eating Cheetos.
Oh, yeah.
And so there was that sort of, like you said, I think the way you would put it would be a shared experience.
Mm-hmm.
You really don't have that today.
No, you've got, we have what? We subscribe to a package above basic cable.
Yeah.
Just one. And there's like 10 above us. But we get 500 and some channels. No. I'm sorry, I just took count the other day, 700 and some channels, and we're just at one step above basic cable. There's probably another 300 or 400 channels that we don't get.
I remember a Married with Children episode. Do you remember the episode where they first got cable? Al was just ecstatic. 68 channels!
Yeah.
That's not even basic cable nowadays. And that was a big, I remember when we got cable, that was a big deal. You almost were into triple digits. That was such a huge deal for cable back then.
Oh, I remember we were excited when we got cable because ABC came in clear.
for one.
Just from where we were from Muncie to Indianapolis, which all of our major stations were coming out of Indianapolis, you just, because of where we were, you never got ABC.
Well, and then you brought up TV. Nowadays, everything has such a short shelf life.
And
let's just stick to TV right now. You know, like the Playboy Club. Gone, one episode.
1 episode and gone.
In 1988, a show would get a good 7, 8, 10 episodes before they'd go, yeah, this just isn't working. Now, nowadays, it's got to work instantaneously or it's done.
Yeah, I do. I remember shows, really bad shows, would still have a full season under their belt. And they would probably know mid-season, yeah, we're not going to renew you for the next season, so they could close their storylines.
Yeah, now it's ridiculous how fast everything goes on TV. And then also, some people will argue with this, probably you, because you have the opposite opinion of me on just about everything. I think just the quality of science fiction television was better then than now. No. Nowadays, they're too reliant on the special effects. Back then, I mean, a show like Max Headroom, groundbreaking in 1987, okay, would be groundbreaking in 2012.
There were some excellent, excellent SF shows back then. Max Headroom was one of them. I don't think they're better overall.
I'm just talking idea-wise.
Well, look at Battlestar Galactica. The modern Battlestar Galactica turned what was basically a cheesy, hokey, failing television show. Failed television show into this drama. And that's one thing that I like about modern science fiction. Okay, most modern science fiction shows is... the audiences have gotten a little bit smarter. The producers have gotten a little bit smarter, and we've moved from pow pow. Look at the lasers. It's basically cowboys and Indians in space.
Star Wars.
To something with some actual depth to their characters. Look at the modern. And I realize you're not a fan of it, but the modern incarnation of Doctor Who. We've had three recent modern doctors. Christopher Eccleston did his thing, and it was, I'm sorry, Chris, it was a very thin Doctor, character-wise. But then David Tennant stepped in, and you tended to get a little bit, you know, you got a little bit more deep with that character, and you explore the relationships around this man in a box who travels through time and space.
Are you leaving out the 1996 Fox Doctor Who?
Yes, I am, because that's not...
You don't consider that modern?
That is not Doctor Who. And no, I don't consider it modern. It's over 10 years old. Hi, I work in technological. You 5 years? Nay, screw you, go on.
All right, fine.
and then we have the, you know, Matt Smith, the current Doctor, who really has, I think for the first time since Tom Baker, and I'm going to ruffle some feathers there, but for the first time since Tom Baker really has... given us a true three-dimensional, deeply characterized doctor who has had to face some very interesting moral quandaries. And I see a lot of modern science fiction being able to do that. The Stargate series, very meh movie. It was pretty good, but
it was all right for what it was.
Great. And then you had Stargate SG-1. Which was meh for the first few seasons, and then they started playing with character.
I disagree. I think that was meh throughout the whole series.
Okay, then you had Stargate Atlantis, and you...
Again, meh.
But...
and then Stargate Universe, which just kicked everybody in the nuts and went, now this is what Stargate should be. Remember how I talk about Deep Space Nine?
Yeah.
SGU is the Deep Space Nine of that franchise.
I'm going to have to check out Universe, because to tell you the truth, Atlantis and SG-1 were so meh. But they, you know, they would just start playing with the characters, and then they killed the series.
Universe is the same way; it died after its second season. But those are fine seasons, man.
I'll have to check them out.
It's really dark, and it's heavily serialized, which is what pissed off all the Stargate fans. You know, just like Deep Space Nine did with Next Generation. It's not fun anymore. Well, yeah, because it's telling a real story about real characters now. It's not a swashbuckling adventure across the universe anymore. It, you know, SGU was totally different.
Even the these last two seasons of Eureka.
I never got into Eureka.
Yeah, I understand. But they're finally playing with some depth to the characters that they were always pretty cardboard up until these last two seasons when they went, okay, you're canceled. And then they started developing their characters a little bit more. I was surprised.
But I just mean like TV in general. Look at what are considered the most groundbreaking shows in modern television. And I'm going to say modern as 1970 and up, okay?
Okay.
Where did all those come from? The 1980s or the 1970s? You know, you've got All in the Family. You've got Hill Street Blues. You've got St. Elsewhere. You've got China Beach. You've got shows like that. How many 2000 and up shows can you say this absolutely broke new ground for television?
You can't. And this gets us right back to where we are. You can't. And the reason that you can't is because that I think that things have been spread so thin, and you've got so many people competing with not just other TV stations but with stuff online now, competing for these eyeballs, that you can't get a lot of innovation, because I have a feeling somebody goes, I want to be really, really innovative. And some executive goes, no, that's not going to play in Peoria. You know, that's not going to sell the that lowest common denominator of eyeballs that
we talked about the other week.
And so I think that's, unfortunately, that choice is stifling innovation in many respects. And then you've got, you know, luckily you do have the startup networks like Hub, which I realize it's an internet meme, but they took a chance with the new My Little Pony, and it won. Whether you like it or not, it became popular, and it's been a selling show. And then you've got some networks like the BBC and BBC America, which luckily, thanks to their funding setup, can take a few more chances, and that's one of the reasons why I appreciate BBC America so much.
Well, and you just brought up like My Little Pony. Now, I'm going to go out on a long kind of ego limb here. The cartoons we grew up with were better than any kind of cartoons from the 90s or 2000s, I think.
The 90s, I'll fight you, but
I don't know. Maybe it's the fact that I was a teenager in the 90s that I just could not get into the cartoons where, I mean, we had He-Man and Transformers and G.I. Joe and Thundercats and My Little Pony and Strawberry Shortcake for the girls and, you know, Rainbow Bright and Jem and the Ewoks and droids, and we had the New Adventures of Mighty Mouse. And
dude, wait a minute. Did you just use Ewoks and droids as examples of good cartoons?
I really like both those cartoons.
Those were terrible.
And the last time you've seen them was...
Actually, just a couple weeks ago.
Because really, Ewoks, if you take out the fact that they're in Star Wars, they're no worse than any other kid's cartoon at the time.
Yeah,
it was only hated so much because it was every now and then a stormtrooper would show up or they'd refer to the Force.
But droids?
Droids was pretty good, especially the White Witch arc, which was the first five-episode arc.
No. Anyway.
I will fight you on that.
Anyway, and I'll fight you in the 90s, because in the 90s you had Tiny Toon Adventures and Animaniacs and Freakazoid and all of those deals that Spielberg threw his name on.
While I liked those, I don't think they were as influential as G.I. Joe and the Transformers and Thundercats and that were on our little boy brains of the 80s. I don't think those shows were on the little boy brains of the 90s. I don't think they grabbed the kids as much as G.I. Joe and Transformers and the Sunbow and Rankin Bass stuff did.
See, and I do. And the reason I think that is because we've grown up and we've taken over the world. And you'll notice that recently there's been this huge nostalgia fest with G.I. Joe Renegades now?
Horrendous.
Which is terrible. You've got all of the Transformers reboots.
Horrendous.
I'm I'm looking forward to a reboot.
Horrendous.
But you've got all of this stuff coming back, and that's because we're at the age now where we're running things. And I have a feeling that in 20 years, when you and I are a little older and dealing with that stage of life, there is going to be a resurgence of of the Spielbergian cartoons and the other cartoons of the 90s that will show up again. Well,
and then not even cartoons. Let's just go back to television. There were, shows created in the 70s and 80s that would never make it past the pitch stage today. I mean, Freddy's Nightmares for 2 seasons? Would a Nightmare on Elm Street TV show ever even have been attempted today? Friday the 13th, the series, War of the Worlds, even bringing Star Trek back, assuming Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, and Enterprise had not happened, okay? And you just had classic Trek. Today, would you take an old 60s cult show and try and do a new version of it today? I don't think you would. You'd reboot it. You wouldn't do a sequel series.
Right.
You know, because today everything is all about reboots, remakes, redos.
No, that I'll agree with you on. That, I mean, that I'm not going to fight you on. And I'm not saying that you couldn't. I'm not saying there wasn't groundbreaking stuff in the 80s. And I'm certainly not saying that the 80s wasn't the right time for that groundbreaking stuff or whatever. But what I'm saying is it wouldn't fly today. And a lot of it wouldn't fly because of political correctness and because it doesn't, like I said, it wouldn't play in Peoria. It would not sell to that lowest common denominator. I think that the competition, while good in many, many respects, and I think competition is good in most industries, I think it stifles innovation in TV. For the most part, it makes the innovative stuff more difficult to find.
It goes back to when we did our podcasting episode, right? About that, yes, it does give everybody a chance to get something out there, but at the same time, 99% of that is shit, yeah. And these people should not have gotten their show on the air.
And it makes it more difficult to find the really good stuff. Again, we had lesser choice. We had more innovation going on back then. But we could find that stuff because they also would throw their marketing might behind it. Well, and again, today, just taking a couple of we could have a really, really, really awesome show pop up on the G4 network.
Yeah, out it's of not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
I realize, but let's pretend it did. I wouldn't know because G4
is dead to me.
We could have something really amazingly groundbreaking and really heavy in drama and something that I would really, really enjoy. And if it showed up on the Oxygen Network or Lifetime or BET or one of these networks that I don't watch, I'm never going to know about it.
Well, let's change focus a little bit to music. Now, obviously, music is something you and I disagree on greatly. So
yes.
I'm going to try and talk in general terms, okay? That, you know, when we were growing up, we had Maiden, we had the Misfits, we had Dead Kennedys, we had, you know, things like that. We had Nugent still putting out records, things of that nature. I can't imagine being a teenager today and looking forward to Nickelback. You know, we got to go see Iron Maiden live. They've got, yeah, Nickelback.
You know, you may pick on Nickelback quite a bit, but they still
suck.
They still sell out stadiums. They can't suck that bad.
Justin Bieber sells out stadiums, and he sucks, literally and figuratively.
Yeah, but somebody must enjoy him. And that's actually, I love the music scene of today.
Oh, that, you see, like I said, I knew you and I were going to disagree.
Yes, we were going to way disagree on this. And I'm not saying I love the music scene because I love Bieber and blah, 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 because I don't. He could go piss up a rope for all I care.
Girls can't piss up ropes.
What I love about the music scene today is that's one of the things where things really have become compartmentalized, and where you can just go out and what music you want, what music you want to hear, what new artists you want to check out, you can just go do it. And that's one thing where the World Wide Web has both, it's killing the big behemoth music industry, and keep it up, boys, good work. And it's giving a lot of smaller and local groups really a chance
to...
Yeah, a voice, a chance to shine, a chance to distribute on their stuff on their terms to their fans. And so that's actually, and, you know, maybe there is a modern Maiden, but it's, you know, Steve and the gang playing in his garage, and you just haven't discovered them yet.
That's true, but they're not selling out stadiums like garbage like Nickelback is.
No, not yet.
And yes, I know we had our share of garbage back then, but I'm saying the music that formed me, and I'm saying this with total ego, is better than the music that's forming the kids of today.
The music that formed you, at least to some extent, was corporate controlled, was selected, and you didn't have nearly as big of a choice or an awareness of your local bands and your local groups. So the music that formed you was very, very compartmentalized and tunnel visioned, and it was only what you chose to pay attention to. The music that forms kids today is the music that they go out and choose, that they go out and find, that they share amongst their friends and have a chance to really delve into it without, you know, I remember you and I, and I know you've had this same experience, but I remember going to Karma Records on the day Blah's album was released, money that I have scrimped and saved and worked for in hand, ready to get, just excited to get that album. Nowadays, you just, oh, Blah released a new album 3 hours ago.
Meh.
Let's hit the web and download it. And that, I...
Again, it's sort of a shared experience. The day, say, the new Dead Kennedys album came out in like 1987.
Right.
You know, if you were a Dead Kennedys fan, you all went out and got that album that first day, and you were all basically listening to it at the same time.
Or,
again, shared experience.
Or in my case, you know, one of your friends was able to get it, and so you all went over to his house, and you all listened to it.
Right.
And yeah, that bit of it is missing. But at the same time, I can go, I wonder what Norwegian folk polka type music would sound like. And I can just plug it right into Google, and eventually I'll end up with 3 or 4 examples of Norwegian folk polka.
All right. Well, let's talk, this is a little bit technology, but, and I'm not trying to turn this into a Radiodrome episode. But you and I grew up when the video store came about.
Right.
I mean, when home video really took hold.
Right.
Is when, I mean, you already brought up cable. That was a big deal. But home video is what blew movies wide open into the mainstream.
Sure.
And to us, that was something new. That was something special to have the ability to grab a tape, to grab a movie, pay $2 for it, and have it for that night and watch that movie.
Sure.
Kids of today have always grown up with that, the ability to do that.
Or the ability to get whatever they want for free and watch it online.
More or less instantaneous,
or,
yes. Yeah. And that's something that I think it kind of makes them lazy in a certain way when it comes to as a movie fan. Because to us, when you went and rented that movie, you brought it home, you popped it in the VCR, cover art totally lied to you. Cover art was amazing. Movie's garbage. Movie shot on fucking camcorder. It's absolute garbage. You still sat through it. And you didn't sit through it in like that ironic, oh, this is like so bad, it's good, man, kind of way.
Yeah, that didn't start until later.
And nowadays, there's almost like you said before, there's too many options. People can just go, oh, this looks like garbage. Let's see what else is on there. You know, back then there wasn't anything else on. You got that tape. That's the tape you chose that night.
See, it's a trade-off. It really is, because again, I'm envious of that, being able to go out and like Netflix. I have discovered so many incredible documentaries on Netflix and stuff that I'm interested in that I would have watched when I was a kid, and it was around when I was a kid, but I didn't have access to it. And I am envious of that access to media, to entertainment, and I think it's amazing. And for the few of us that were true geeks and wanted to learn and wanted to spend time actually studying, my God, the amount of I want to learn about blah today. Good, you go, you look up blah, and you learn about it. That's something that I envy. Or I want to see this movie. Well, look it up, and there it is. And that is something that I envy. The trade-off with it, and the thing where I'm not sure if I'd be really willing to give up this happening when I was a kid,
okay,
was, again, I was one of the first kids on my block to get a VCR. And so renting a movie and watching a movie became an event for me and the neighborhood kids.
Or even more, being able to record something when you were not home, being able to watch a TV show that aired at 8 p.m. at 3 in the morning when you wanted to. That was something so innovative. Nowadays, they've always had DVR.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that event of you know, calling up my friend Matt who lived next door, or Betsy who lived down the street, or you know, whoever I called in the neighborhood and went, hey, you know, I got this movie. Do you want to watch it?
Wisconsin, yeah. Weed Whacker Massacre is finally out. Come over to my house, exactly. And we're going to watch it. We're going to watch Wisconsin teens turn into giblet gravy with a piece of plastic string.
Exactly. And you know, you would gather with your friends, and it was a big deal. You know, mom would make popcorn or whatever, and it was an event.
Again, making popcorn like on the stove, not just popping shit in the microwave and going, "Oh, hey, it's popcorn."
Dude, we didn't make popcorn on the stove. We didn't do the microwave thing. We had an actual popcorn popping machine.
The vertical ones that would shoot the thing out the little tube.
Well, we had one of those, which that was a hot air popper.
Oh yeah, okay.
You didn't add oil to it or anything. You just poured them in, and it kind of created this little tornado that would pop.
Were you talking about the little one with that wire that would go around and move the kernels into the oil?
No, I'm talking. There didn't have any moving parts at all. It was basically a hot plate and then this big dome, and you would put the seeds in the middle of this specially shaped hot plate. And that's where the oil was. And as it popped up, it would fill up the big plastic dome. And then when the popcorn was done, you just flip it over and take the dome off. And the dome was your serving bowl, too.
Okay.
So we actually had one of those.
Well, and you reminded me when you said that, it made me think of like infomercials. And I'm not saying this is a good innovation, but, you know, infomercials came while we were teens and stuff. That's yes. When they were invented.
Yes.
But like you said, the lack of choice. If it's 3 in the morning, you've got 4 channels, you've got insomnia, you're going to watch an old Hammer flick on the local UHF station. Nowadays, you've got video games, and you've got the internet, and you can go play on your smartphone, yeah. And you can do all this other stuff. It kind of, in a weird way, forced us to watch movies or TV shows we would have never watched before and discovered things that we would have never sought out. Nowadays, you have to seek out whatever you want to see. A kid nowadays, if he wants to see a Godzilla flick, he's got to seek out. He's got to go, I want to watch a Godzilla movie. In our day, it was, oh, look, a Godzilla movie's on. You know, does that make any sense that having taken away some of our choice actually opened us up to experiences we would have not sought out otherwise?
Yeah, but at the same time, if we did want to seek something out back then, you know, you go down to your local video shop and maybe they've got it, maybe they don't, or you go to your local library and maybe they have it, maybe they don't. Now, again, what I'm truly envious of is now, even if they hear mention of, I was paying attention to Facebook the other day. And I heard somebody mention how good a particular show was. It's a Canadian show called Todd and the Book of Pure Evil.
I've heard of it, but I've never seen it.
I was curious because it was getting such rave reviews. It's not on anywhere in the States. It's not on a U.S. network at all. It's purely Canadian content. And so I had to seek it out, but I was able to download it every episode. And I must say it's been worth it. It's been quite entertaining, and I think even you might enjoy it.
Well, there's also the fact, now this is going into a slightly illegal area, but, you know, nowadays we got torrents. You know, sure. you want to see a movie that's not available on video, or Done. You just want to see a movie you don't want to pay for.
Right.
You can find it. When I was bootlegging back in the 90s, and when I was buying bootlegs back in the early 90s when I was in high school, that was a big deal to have gotten this rare Japanese Laserdisc import
sure.
of Zombie or something. That was a big fucking deal. Now you just type in Japanese import Zombie into Google and you'll have 4 dozen different torrents
yep.
of that thing. It kind of takes away, holy fucking shit, I finally get to see the uncut version of this movie.
Yeah, and what I'm that is both a good and a bad thing because it does... It takes away, this is an event. It takes that away from it.
Yeah, and to me, the internet just killed that.
It's just a thing.
Well, and then, you know, we can't ignore video games. I'm not so dumb as to say games are better than they are now, because there's always, you know, there are games that are better now than there was, and there are games that were better on the Super Nintendo and the Genesis that are way better than anything that's out today. It all, that is a very specific thing. Mm-hmm. I would, you know, like Mass Effect, I would never, you couldn't have done that in the 80s.
I couldn't even conceive time, of that as a game in the 80s.
At the same time, Final Fantasy 6/3, you know, depending on right, where you are,
yeah.
is clearly the best game in that entire goddamn franchise.
No, there will be people who will fight you on that one.
I'm sorry, 3/6 is easily the best game.
I know, but there will be people who will fight you on that one.
And I say they're more... I've never gotten this whole Final Fantasy VII thing. Why people love that goddamn game so much.
I don't know.
I couldn't play that for more than 3 hours. I mean, I got like maybe 10% of that game in, and I just went, this is so stupid. I despise the polygon graphics. That this game is dumb. I am finished with this.
Okay.
I've never understood why everyone says that was the pinnacle of what, you know, modern gaming was. It's like, this game sucks, though.
Well, let's take a different series. One of the last games I had when I had my Wii was the Mario Kart Wii.
Okay.
And it was fun. I enjoyed it. Wasn't too bad. But I'll be damned if I don't fire up my Super Nintendo every now and then and just throw in the original Mario Kart and have fun that way.
I mean, let's take Sonic the Hedgehog.
Oh, the ones that came out on Sega Genesis back in the day.
And the Sega CD were the only far, good ones.
Yeah, they are far superior to the modern, say, even generations. And yeah.
Sonic did not make the transition to like 3D gaming.
No.
He did not make that well. Actually, most 80s franchises didn't make that transition well. You look at stuff like Mortal Kombat and Contra, and most of them did not translate well to the 3D realm for whatever reason. Maybe it was just bad ideas, bad programming, or these games only work on a two-dimensional plane.
Yeah. So you've got things on both ends of the spectrum, but gaming is the weird one. The thing that I do like about gaming today, again, that we didn't have, what is the
multiplayer?
Well, no, not so much multiplayer, because I don't like being called a faggot on a headset and stuff like
from
that.
From some kid in Korea.
Yeah, and so multiplayer gaming has never appealed to me, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing. If you're good at it, good on you. Keep up the good work. It's just not my thing. Although co-op, being able to play with my friends while he's at his house and I'm at my house, that's nice.
They had that back then too, like with the Toe Jam and Earl games, and you know, co-op did come from the 16-bit generation too.
That was not easy, but again, the one thing that I think is still true about games that even Okay. Back to my original point, and I'll get that out, and then I'll move on. My original point was, today there seems to be a lot larger selection of indie games, and there seems to be a few channels, whether it's Xbox Live or PSN or whatever, where independent developers can get their games out. And whether they're big hits or not, who knows? But I like that, again, choice that's given today that wasn't given on the 2600
or the NES. I absolutely agree with the choice. But the thing about indie games, have you noticed a recent trend in all those, you know, like you said, all this extra choice? Retro?
Yeah.
You know how much I hate that term, but that's what they call it. They keep making all these games now that are emulating 80s and 90s games because that seems to be where the market is.
Well, in the indie market, yes, not in the big name market. And it's easier to program.
Oh, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it's easier to make a game that would have fit on the Genesis right. than it is for a game that would have fit on the PS3.
Right. But So you've got a little bit more choice in the indie market, and as a developer, you've got at least one or two channels to get things out there.
True.
A decent game. You've got the bad side of multiplayer, but the good side of multiplayer is co-op if you just play with somebody that you know, like Lego Pirates of the Caribbean. I fire that up every now and then. I've got a friend in California who absolutely adores it. And so we play together, and he shows me secrets that he's discovered, and I show him other stuff and things like that. And it's fun that way, and we get to play together in a way that we wouldn't be able to play in the past. The thing that I do miss is, again, that event, going out and getting a new cartridge for whether it was the NES or the Atari 2600 or whatever system it was, and having friends come
big
over and
deal.
Yeah, you know, hey, look, I just got this, and friends would come over and we'd rotate on the machine, you know, and
or even in an arcade when they got that new cabinet
of
some new game, the first day Time Killers is out or something.
Yeah,
everybody's crowded around that, eagerly waiting with that quarter in hand because, again, shared. You know, it's different to, hey, look, I can, you know, record my Halo game and put it up on YouTube. It's different when you're playing in an arcade and there's two dozen people standing around you watching you kick the final boss's ass.
Oh, yeah.
There's a weird sense of elation to that.
And especially in the larger arcades when you would have, what used to draw? Well, the Mortal Kombat games would draw huge crowds.
Dragon's Lair.
Dragon's Lair.
Used to do that. They used to put them up on the TVs.
Yeah, the second tier TV so that if you're back in the crowd a ways, you could just look at the top of the machine and watch the game going on. They did that with Mortal Kombat, too.
I don't remember that with Kombat, but I remember Dragon's Lair. That was a big deal at Showbiz Pizza, of all places. They used to do that here in Green Bay.
Aladdin, Sultan's Castle.
Yep, you've told me about that.
Yeah,
they used to do that with Dragon or with Kombat?
Well, with Mortal Kombat and with whatever new game was in. They even, at one point, what was the pinball game that they did this for?
Earthshaker?
Simpsons.
I think.
Simpsons Pinball.
Well, that's
They put a big mirror up above. Okay. And so if you were back a ways, you could still see the pinball board through the big mirror. And I always liked playing their new pinball games because they were the only ones that were decently lit.
That's something else that is missing, that today's kids just have no idea. No, arcades.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there was an arcade once, this is like 4 or 5 years ago, we were at somewhere, we found this little ratty arcade that had nothing worth playing.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard this one guy go, wow, an arcade, how quaint. And it's like, really? Is that what arcades have become? A quaint little, wow, there's a little blast from the past.
Well, I don't
Instead
know.
Of me, I go, holy shit, an arcade. Fucking, I need change.
Do they have a Ms. Pac-Man machine?
Yeah, it's like, I need change. Give me quarters.
Holy crap, Metal Gear. Or not Metal Gear. Metal Slug. Let's go.
Yeah, I was going to say Metal Gear. I don't think that was ever an arcade.
No. In fact, there was one at the Bay Park Mall.
Okay.
You remember that old neon mini.
Yeah, it's only been through nine thing. Different name changes, so yeah. I understand why you got tongue tied on that.
Well, it's completely gone now.
Yeah, but I mean, before it left, it only changed its name every year or two.
Yeah, every 6 months, it'd be like Neon Putt Putt. No, Blas Arcade. No, you know, Fun and Games, and then finally it just went away, unfortunately. But
yeah, that's something like. My son has never experienced a real arcade. I mean, yeah, you know, there'll be a place that's got two or three games, or a hotel will have a game room. Sorry, guys, that's not what an arcade was.
Now, the hotel game rooms have a soft spot in my heart because when I was doing the hot air ballooning and traveling all over the world, one of the things that you can count on these larger hotel sponsors was that they would always have a game room with seven or eight games in it.
Usually a pinball machine.
So, yeah, usually a pinball machine and some arcade games. But being able to walk in there and smelling the pool and that hotel yep. cleanser stuff, and maybe three or four of the machines were working out of the six or seven that were there. And if you were lucky, it was a good machine that was working.
It's not as bad as the ice cream machine that was always in the back that had the dried on.
Oh, yeah, the ice cream.
Smeared all over the little door. And it's like, I'm not so sure I want to get something out of this anymore.
So, but yeah, and that really is the trade-off of the youth today in a nutshell, is the choice is there. If you want it, you can seek it out, you can find it, and you'll get it. But that event status, that it's a big happening, seems to be missing.
Well, and also, in a weird way, I think it does create laziness. I mean, not to belabor this, but like the whole textees thing and the whole Twitter speak, it just seems to breed laziness. You know, when we were kids, you'd call your friend on the phone, or you'd send them a letter and you'd have to actually write out real words. Now you just do BRB RK, you know, all these weird letters, and then you know, and it's making you lazy as a teen.
Every generation has called the generation that comes after it lazier because they had it easier. I think, yeah, there, but at the same time, I would trade that off for. If a kid really wants to learn today, he's got so many tools at his disposal.
We only got 3 minutes left, but I got to bring up porn. Porn was so much better when we were a kid. Again, the event status. Now you can get porn anywhere. The internet, porn. To us, we had to find and fucking steal mom or dad's tape, hide it till they went to bed.
Oh, dad's Playboys in the garage? Yeah.
You know. Slip it into the VCR, turn the volume all the way down. I mean, porn was just masturbating was hard when we were a teen. Nowadays, you can jerk off so much easier.
I've jerked off 3 times during the show. You didn't even notice.
And we're in the same room.
Yeah, I know.
So that's really creepy.
But speaking of being in the same room and your porn, again, an event. I would invite Matt from next door and other kids from the neighborhood. Look, I found my dad's Playboy.
And porn was really pushing the boundaries. Now, any kind of fetish you want,
yeah,
it's anything. At the tip of your fingers. Back then, you saw a chick taking a cock in the ass. That was a big deal to a 13-year-old. Oh, my God, but she poops from there, exactly.
You know?
Now it's like if they don't take it in the ass, it's a boring porn.
But now, again, we're back to that deal of lots and lots of choice. Not a whole lot of innovation left.
Exactly. So it's like, I can't believe it took 3 minutes left in the show before I even thought of porn. You know, I'm glad I grew up when porn was really... breaking into the mainstream is when we grew up with porn, you know, and porn became video.
But we definitely had our advantages of our youth. And I think that kids today have their advantages. I don't know if one is better than the other, but I'm happy with the experience that I've had.
See, I just lament the fact that my son was not able to grow up when I grew up. I mean, like Jillian on What the Fuck, she's outright said she wasn't born till like 81, that she doesn't remember most of the 80s because she was too young, but she loves the 80s. She wished she were a little bit older so she could have experienced the 80s like you and I did.
Well, I wish I could have experienced the 60s.
I don't. I'm happy with having had half the 70s and all of the 80s as a child.
But, you know, that's the way it is. My wife's the same way. She's Anyway, we're out of time. Thanks a lot for joining us. I'd love to hear what you guys have to say. Look me up on Facebook, Gmail, Twitter, smurray75, and I've gained a few friends, and I'm happy for that. So,
and lostinthestaticshow@gmail.com. And so, I don't know, let's not pad this out, because nope. You always do that. Good night.
Nope. Good night, everybody.